You would open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 20. Matthew chapter 20. Katie and I are excited to be here this morning. It's not just that we want to see you, we're just excited that we made it. Because you see, Mom is out of town. And when Mom's out of town, we're just glad we get anywhere, aren't we, Katie? Hannah had a chorus competition in Gatlinburg, and so Cindy and Hannah are over there, and so poor old Katie's been stuck with Dad all weekend. It was interesting this morning, as I mentioned to you before, when Cindy's been away, it's always kind of crazy around the house. We've got a potluck for the new deacons after services, so trying to iron clothes for the two of us and trying to get both of us dressed and hope both of us have combed hair and get food prepared for the potluck. It was just kind of crazy around the house. I'll be honest with you, this morning was one of those mornings it would have been great to have had some help. Moms, have you ever stood there and after you've ironed two or three piles of clothes or done several loads of laundry and several loads of dishes and you thought to yourself, man, I sure wish I could have some help. Dad, there been a Saturday afternoon when the car's broken down and you need to do some painting and there's some work that needs to be done in the house, a cabinet door's off, and the yard needs to be mowed, and you said, man, I sure wish I had some help. Have you ever sometimes thought about what would it be like to have the money to be able to hire some help? You ever thought about sometimes what it would be like to have service? Maybe that's why we enjoy going on vacation sometimes. We go on vacation and it's neat because somebody else does the laundry. You go out to eat and somebody else does the cooking. Somebody else cleans up the dishes. My guess is there's been some time for all of us when we thought, man, it sure would be nice to have some help. Man, it sure would be nice if I could have somebody to serve me or you see something on TV or you see some special about somebody with a lot of money and they got somebody that drives their car for them and they open the door for them and they lay out their clothes for them in the morning and they iron their clothes for them, they do everything. Sometimes my guess is a lot of us have thought, boy, it sure would be nice to have a servant. But you know, Jesus challenges us to not thinking about having a servant. Jesus challenges us to think about being a servant. With that in mind, would you read with me Matthew chapter 20, starting in verse 20. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came to Jesus with her sons, bowing down, making a request of Him. And He said to her, "What do you wish?" And she said to Him, "Command that in your kingdom these two sons of mine may sit one on your right hand and one on your left." And Jesus answered, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink?" And they said to Him, "We are able." And He said to them, "My cup you shall drink, but to sit on my right hand and on my left, this is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father." And hearing this, the ten became indignant with the two brothers. But Jesus called them to Himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. It is not this way among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be last. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give His life as a ransom for many." At the end of today's service, the elders will officially appoint, I believe it's 19 new men, to the position of deacon. We talked previously when we looked at, a couple of weeks ago, the work of appointment of a deacon. We talked about that a deacon is not a title, it's not a position so much as it is a work, it's a lifestyle, it's a process of doing, it's an action word. And I thought today, as we think about these men taking on their special new responsibilities in God's kingdom, that we take a moment to review a passage that we alluded to, mentioned just briefly in both of those sermons 2 weeks ago, how Jesus calls all to service. I want all of us to think about the need to strive, not to be served, but to serve. That's the message of Jesus here, and that's the message not only of His words, His teaching, But I believe it's the message of his lifestyle and the example that he set before us. I want to just hit a few highlights. We don't want to take a lot of time, so we can allow time at the end for that special service. But I want to hit a few highlights. I want us to think about the request, the response, and the reality of Matthew chapter 20, verse 20 and following. First of all, let's just think for just a moment about the request. The request begins with an ant. If we look at John chapter 19, verse 25, and compare John chapter 19, verse 25 with the other gospel accounts of the cross and who was present at the cross, I think it's a reasonable conclusion to conclude that the mother of James and John was Salome, and that not only was their mother Salome, their dad was Zebedee, but their mother Salome was, I believe, the sister of Mary. John 19:25 mentions the sister of Mary, the mother of Jesus, was present at the cross. And again, I think when we compile the other accounts, I believe that that sister is Salome, the mother of James and John. So you've got a unique situation going on here. First of all, let me emphasize that the apostles regularly struggle with this issue of who was the greatest. You go all the way back to chapter 18, just a couple chapters actually back, Matthew chapter 18. They approach Jesus in the first couple of verses there, I believe it's actually mentioned in verse 1, and say, "Who is greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And if you read through the Gospels, especially the events surrounding the cross, there was a regular discussion among the apostles about who among them was greatest among them and who was greatest in the kingdom. So what you have happening here in Matthew chapter 20 is you have James and John. The other accounts don't mention specifically their mother doing the talking. We find out here from Matthew's account that James and John and their mother approached Jesus. But the boys kind of use mama to get an inroad with Jesus. Because you need to remember that if what we think is true, then James and John's mother is the aunt of Jesus. And so, you know, it's one thing if a cousin comes to you and asks for something, but if your aunt comes to you, your mama's sister comes to you and asks you for something, you know, how can you turn down your aunt? I mean, you know, when you were little, she helped to change your diaper. She helped to feed you. You know, think of all the things she did for you throughout your life. She was practically like a second mama to you. How can you say no to our mother, your aunt? My guess is that was James and John's thinking. And so their mama comes to Jesus, and I want to emphasize that while we look at this passage, it may show somewhat Salome and James and John in a negative light because they're concerned with power. I want us to see something positive here. If we look at the other gospel accounts, this was a fairly dark time. It was a troublesome time. The apostles were aware that Jesus was troubled and concerned about something. In fact, if you look at this very account in verses 18 and 19, he talks about the Son of Man being condemned and crucified by the Gentiles. And there's just an air of uncertainty, an air of darkness and worry and concern. And the apostles didn't really know exactly what was going to happen, but there was something wrong they could tell in the presence of Jesus and what He said. Yet in spite of all that is going on, the request by Salome and the boys evidences faith in Jesus and who He is. In other words, they asked this question because they believed that Jesus was the Messiah. They asked this question because they believed that He was King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And so while we may look at the negative aspect of the question, I think we need to give credit where credit is due. They believed in Jesus. They believed that He was the Messiah. That's why He asked the question. The problem was that they saw His Messiahship as something of advancement for them. Instead of seeing His work as the betterment of all humanity, and that if they were going to be, so to speak, a part of His administration, if they're going to be in His cabinet, if you will, as a president, as king, as leader of Israel in the world, they failed to understand the significance and the purpose of His leadership. They saw it in terms of themselves. And so they come to Jesus through their mother and ask that when He ascends to the throne, confident that He would ascend to a throne, they're wanting to make sure that they're the ones who sit on either side of Him. I'm reminded of 1 Kings chapter 1, where there you have Bathsheba approaching David because Adonijah is trying to take the throne away. Even though his father David is not dead yet, Adonijah is trying to steal the throne. And he's already setting things in place and in motion to do just that, even though David apparently previously had said by the direction of God that Solomon was going to be king. And so in 1 Kings chapter 1, you have Bathsheba going to David, interceding on behalf of her son Solomon. In other words, I just want us to see that Salome's not the first mom in the world to try to help get advancement for her son or sons or daughters. But as we look at this particular story, Jesus simply says in His reaction or His response to them, you really don't know what you're asking for. See, they just didn't understand what Jesus' mission was all about. We need to remember that even the apostles, go to Acts chapter 1, right as Jesus is about to go back to heaven, the apostles are asking Jesus, is now the time you're going to restore the kingdom to Israel? They had this picture in their mind of an earthly king on an earthly throne in an earthly palace. And so they saw things in very physical, very earthly terms. They pictured, it seems the Jews pictured a Messiah who was going to reign and give the Jews preeminence, who was going to overthrow the Romans, who was going to repress all those who had oppressed them. And so they just had, they believed He was the Messiah. They just didn't understand what the Messiah was to do or what He was to do and what He was all about. And so because of that, they didn't understand what they were asking for. And so Jesus says simply, you do not know what you're asking for. And He says, can you drink the cup I am going to drink? And cup was usually used, we think, in terms of Socrates and drinking the poison of death and condemnation. It was a word that was usually used for a cup of suffering, a cup of retribution, a cup of punishment, a cup of execution. Those are the kind of things that came to mind when they thought in terms of taking this cup. And so basically what Jesus said is, are you willing to suffer as I am going to suffer? Now I want you to remember that they didn't really understand what He was saying, but they were confident that whatever Jesus did, they would go with it. Okay, I think of the words of Peter who said, you know, if you die, I'll die with you. I'll never deny you, Peter said. And so James and John are saying something very similar. Whatever it is you've got to do, we're there with you. Okay, that's why we should be the ones on either side of your throne. Okay, that's why we should be your chief lieutenants, or we should be the Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense or Vice President, whatever you want to call it in your new cabinet. Because we're going to be there for you, and whatever you do, and we'll do, and wherever you go, we'll go. And Jesus says, well, yes, you are going to drink the cup that I'm going to drink. James would be the first recorded martyr for Christ. I recorded in the New Testament in James chapter 12. John, at an age somewhere in his 80s or 90s, would be exiled to the Isle of Patmos. And the background of the book of Revelation is that exile to Patmos. So the fact is, both of these brothers would suffer for Christ. One would literally give his life early on for Christ. The other would live a long life of service to Christ and would suffer because of that in this life. And so Jesus says, yes, you're going to drink the cup I drink. You will suffer, maybe not in the exact same way, but you will suffer and you'll drink the cup of suffering. But He said, it's not my decision as to who is going to be on the right and the left. That is not my call. Over and over in the Scriptures, we're reminded that Jesus is equal to God. You can look at places like Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 and following. Christ is equal to God. But Christ also, not filled with ego or pride, was willing to serve the Father. He would say on one occasion, He said, I don't even know when I shall return, only the Father. I don't know, the angels don't know, so be prepared, but the Father knows. Jesus acknowledges the leadership of the Father, even though they're equal, it seems, from the Scriptures in every respect. And so Jesus says, that's not my call to choose who is going to be on my right and on my left. As you look at the reaction of the rest of the apostles, it's a reaction of indignation. How dare you do this? And my guess is, just to be honest with you, they're not upset because they think it's terrible to try to want to get on the right and left. My guess is they're upset because they weren't first. My guess is they're upset because they didn't think of it. My guess is they're upset because they think, oh no, now James and John, I mean, you know, they've got their mama, his aunt, pulling strings for them. Surely James and John are going to get those positions. And Peter's thinking, man, I wanted that position. And maybe Matthew's thinking, man, I thought I would have that position. I don't think they're upset because they recognize the wrongness of what's happening. Because again, we look elsewhere, and we can go back to Matthew chapter 18 and find clear reference that they seem to, as a group, been concerned about who's the greatest. They all wanted to be the greatest. And so they're upset because somebody else got in line in front of them. Somebody else got what they wanted or what they were after. Or maybe they thought, oh man, you use backdoor underhanded tactics to get to the front. Instead of going to the front by being a great follower and doing great deeds, oh, you got your mama to come and help you get that position. You know, it's interesting as you think about that, and we've mentioned this before, they've created a new term for many modern parents. They call us helicopter parents. And what the reason they have that term is because we hover over our children. Colleges now have limits on how often parents can call the college. You're having problems now the same way with employers. It's happening in high school, college, and after graduation where you got moms and dads who are calling and saying, you know, Susie didn't pass that test. Can you give him another test? Can you fix it for him? Or you know, why didn't you give John this job? Or don't you really think George needs this raise? I mean, you're 25 and 26 and 27-year-old kids were out working in the world, and mom and dad are still calling the plant or calling bosses and trying to get them raises and jobs. That's what they're talking about, those helicopter parents. So I want us to realize that maybe we're not so different today from Salome, and maybe we're not so different from James and John. And Jesus says, you know, the rulers of this world, the rulers of the Gentiles, they use their authority, they exercise their authority over others. Sometimes they abuse that authority. But He said, I want you to be different kinds of leaders. Now, I want you to notice, Jesus is not saying that there aren't going to be any positions of leadership in the Lord's church. We can think of later discussions, especially in the writings of Paul, about elders and leaders in the home and leaders in the church, etc. God is not saying, or Jesus is not saying, that nobody's going to ever exercise authority. But what Jesus is saying is the way authority is exercised in the church is going to be radically different from the rest of the world. I think of this last week, Katie was watching the movie The King and I. I don't know if you've seen The King and I. There have been different versions, even a cartoon version, I think, out of it. But she was watching one of those, and it's basically a story about the king of Siam and an English teacher who I think is actually from India who comes to teach his children. And she and her young boy move there to the palace and teaches his children. And it was interesting to watch just bits and pieces of that as I was nearby to think about that position in light of this lesson. You know, think about being a king where somebody waits on you hand and foot. They'll go get your shoes for you. They'll go get your supper for you. I mean, you really, if you don't want to, don't have to raise a hand for anything. Jesus spoke to men who had seen those kinds of things. They had seen the Roman governors. They'd even seen the centurions. They had seen the leaders of the Gentile world who had servants who waited at their every beck and call. When they came and resided in the palace of Herod the Great or the Praetorium in Jerusalem, they saw the servants. They saw the entourage. They saw the soldiers who stood at their side ready to do whatever they asked. And Jesus said, instead of being like those people who are wanting somebody to serve them all the time, He said, the kind of leaders I want you to be are the kind of leaders who are humble servants of others. I want you to go back to Matthew chapter 18 where they asked, who is greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Jesus responded to that by getting a child and say, the great ones are the ones who act like kids, who are humbly willing to listen to somebody else. You know, that's what happens to us as we grow older. We become more set in our ways, and we become less willing to listen to somebody else. When you're 3 years old, 2 years old, if you don't listen to somebody else, you won't survive. You need somebody else. We need others to survive. But as we grow older, and we get degrees, and we get income, and we have bank accounts, and we have stuff, and we know what to do with that stuff, and how to take care of ourselves, we start thinking we don't need anybody else anymore. And so we may become arrogant and prideful and trust in the wrong things. Jesus says the great ones are the ones who have hearts of humility, those who still can be shaped and molded, those who don't try to exalt themselves above others, but rather those who are willing to humble themselves below others. It's a new way of leadership. In fact, it's the Jesus style of leadership. If you look in John chapter 13, Jesus describes this way. He embodies this way. If you look over in Ephesians chapter 5 and you look at verse 22 and following as he talks about the home, it's interesting that when he talks about husbands being leaders in the home, he says the husband's leadership is to be just like the leadership of Christ. So that brings us to the reality. The reality of this sign of leadership, this kind of leadership, is seen in Jesus. And notice again, back in verses 17 through 19, just prior to this discussion, Jesus had said that He was the Son of Man, and that was Jesus' favorite expression for Himself. He regularly referred to Himself as the Son of Man. He says, the Son of Man will be delivered to the chief priests, and He says He'll be condemned, mocked, scourged, and crucified. I want you to remember that we're not talking about some criminal here. We're talking about the Creator of the universe who had never done anything wrong. But Jesus said, I'm going to be subjected to all these things. In John chapter 10, Jesus says, no man takes my life. I lay it down freely. In other words, Jesus was not going to be forced to do these things. He was going to freely choose to have these things happen. His attitude is embodied in verse 28 when he says, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give His life as a ransom for many. Why was He going to be condemned, mocked, scourged, and crucified? Because He needed to save us from our sins. He deserved for the world to bow at His feet. Instead, He humbled Himself and was beaten with a scourge and nailed to a tree to save us from our sins. Because He did not come to be served, but to serve. And then you start in verse 29 when He goes into Jericho. You find that there are two blind men crying out, Son of David, Son of David, help us. They're blind. Their life was a life of begging for daily bread. The others rebuke them. Hey, the Master's busy. He's got places to go, things to do, people to see. But Jesus stopped. Jesus asked what they needed. And Jesus met their need. Whether it's with two blind men, the road to from Jericho to Jerusalem, or whether it's the cross of Calvary, the picture of Jesus' life is a picture of service. We see that in John chapter 13. When Jesus did what a common household servant or slave would have done, when He took a towel and He girded Himself and He washed His apostles' feet. And He calls His apostles and He calls us as His followers to do the same. Would you take out your song books and turn to the hymn of encouragement? I don't know if you've ever read the book Good to Great by Jim Collins. But basically what Collins and his research team have done is they've done a great deal of research into the leading companies of our country. And what they've done is they've set up certain criteria where these companies had to exceed the market value and Wall Street value by certain percentage points. And they looked at companies who rose to these levels, but not only rose to these levels, they sustained those levels for a period of at least 15 years. And then when they found the companies in that category, they found other companies who never rose to those categories, who were in the same field, had basically all the same assets, and they compared and contrasted these good companies with the great companies who sustained greatness. And they looked at traits and characteristics of those great companies. Here's something that I found of interest. In all of those great companies they identified, their top leadership had what they called level 5 leadership characteristics. Here's what they found. In all the great companies, these great companies had great leaders who were men of humility. The companies that had leaders who were full of bravado and always pushing themselves and trying to make themselves look good, those companies usually stayed mediocre. The companies that became great were led by executives who constantly pushed forward the people around them, who all constantly pushed forward the company. In other words, they promoted the company and the people around them instead of themselves. Their focus was on the company and others, not self. Those were the great companies. Isn't that exactly what Jesus said? Great people are people who serve. This morning, I want you to realize that the greatest servant the world has ever known is Jesus. And that when you come to Him, you've nothing to fear. because He was willing to give His life in service to us on the cross of Calvary. So please come and express your faith and repentance, confession and baptism, or rededicate your life to Him. Come and serve the Master Servant as we stand and sing.